Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast. David Staples here from the Cult of Hockey. And I'm talking today with Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey. Welcome, Bruce.
Happy McDavid Day to you, David, and everybody.
Happy McDavid Day to you as well, Bruce. And it truly is a happy day. Excellent, very good, super news from Connor McDavid in that he is signed for less than what was reported that he was going to sign for. And that's a very big deal for the Oilers. And it's very interesting how this came about, Bruce, because what we saw was last week or the week before, it leaked from Elliot Friedman and Ryan Rashog that the deal was going to be about $13.25 million per, which was less than the $15 million maximum, Bruce. But as far as I can see, would have been about the highest percentage of the salary cap that any player other than Sidney Crosby has ever signed for. Now, that's fine. That was a, you know, you're locking up Connor McDavid for 8 years in the prime of his career. So I didn't hear anyone actually complaining about it, except for a few out-of-town critics who made the point that it was going to be hard for the Oilers to compete. We'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
But you know, we both had the fantasy, we both had the hope that McDavid would sign for less than that because it would accomplish a couple things. First, it would actually just give the Oilers a bit more cap space every year to sign other players, but more importantly, would be the symbolic value in terms of every other player signing with the Oilers. And that if McDavid took less than what he could have got, it's a signal to everybody else to think, okay, our best player took about $1 million or two, you know, as much as $2.5 million less than he could have if he had really pressed. And so it's a signal to every player, okay, if you want to be part of this, better not press for every last dollar that you can get. If you want to be part of this winning, maybe you should take a hometown discount, because that's exactly what Connor McDavid did. Over the 8 year life of the contract, he took $20 million less, Bruce, than he could have if he had pressed for the maximum salary. And if he had pressed for the maximum salary, he would have got it. I have no doubt, because unlike most players, unlike almost any player, there would have been lots of offer sheets on the table for Connor McDavid at the maximum contract.
Yeah.
So when you heard the news, Bruce, what did you think?
Well, I've been following the whole thing with interest, as you can well imagine. It hasn't quite had the drama of Wayne Gretzky signing the 21-year deal at center ice on his 18th birthday, but it's come down in a very timely fashion. I thought it was either smart or maybe a little bit reactive when that figure got leaked last week at $13.25 million. And I wondered at the time if he came in like an appreciable chunk less than that it would look good, and everything you just described about the hometown discount would just seem that more obvious if the rumors were pushing the figure a little north of that. So I don't know how much of that was calculated, or maybe some of it was, holy shit, listen to these people react to $13 million. Maybe that is overbiting a little bit. Let's tone it down a bit. Maybe they did. Slightly.
Yeah, some fans, some people saw it as classic. Here's from a tweet from Karth Sahadevan, who's an Oilers fan. Textbook PR management by agent and team. Higher price, floated out to get people's heads around it, then come in lower. Well done.
Yeah, I read that.
I wonder if that's, you know, let's see what McKenzie said. Let's look exactly what Bob McKenzie tweeted.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and this was seconds before the real deal was announced, original deal was expected to be $13.25 million per, but hearing McDavid wasn't comfortable with the number and may have insisted on lowering it. So that implies that McDavid thought about the number, maybe took a look at how people were reacting to it. And so there was no master PR move. This is Connor the hero. Now, it could be that McKenzie's in on it, in on the ruse, you know? I just don't believe that. I think I'm going to take it at face value. I don't think these people are master manipulators, nor do they need to be. And I'm going to take it that McDavid saw some of the reaction, which was happy, but, you know, there was also mentions that this is going to have an impact on the Oilers' salary cap situation. Yep. And he also took note of Leon Draisaitl's pretty aggressive negotiation tactics coming from the Octagon camp, looking between $9 and $10 million, which is they're totally trying to maximize the amount. There's no hometown discount, because when you look at what Draisaitl, what the comparables are, it's about $7.5 million per to $8 million per. So I'm taking this as McDavid was uncomfortable with some of the criticism and the amount of money that was being thrown at him, and just thought, hey, if I'm going to make a donation, I'm sure he makes a number of donations, but why don't I donate a little bit to winning and to my own team? And it's self-interested to do that, and might actually get him another Stanley Cup down the road.
Well, it's worth also to bear in mind, though, that it's been during that last week that 13.25 figures been floating around, that the talk attributed to the Draisaitl camp has gone up in temperature. And I mean, maybe if the thinking was Draisaitl wanted to be paid something comparable to McDavid, well, that whole bar just got lowered a little bit. In truth, we don't know what's going on in those negotiations, but I'm sure we'll talk about Draisaitl a little bit later in the podcast. As far as McDavid is concerned, when you just signed your superstar to a contract that pays him $2 million more than any other player in the league, and people are talking about it as being a hometown discount, you know you have a good superstar.
Ain't that the truth? So, Bruce, let's...
We are laughing.
So I think, Bruce, the truth is that we have Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun to thank for this little discount at the end. He's the most prominent outside critic who actually had a word to say, Bruce, about I heard that sigh and I saw it, like I could see your reaction there. Here's what Steve Simmons wrote last weekend. Connor McDavid will sign a contract soon that will pay him more than $100 million, which will make him the highest paid player in hockey history. But when he's finished and he's set for his life and on his own island, what will matter more? The money or the number of Stanley Cup rings he has won? McDavid might be smart to take less than $13 million a year in order to enable the Oilers to build strength at a time when there is no assurance the NHL salary cap will be increasing significantly in the coming years. Right. Being set for life is wonderful, but can you place a price on winning, or in this case, not winning? It's something the McDavid team needs to think one more time before coming to terms with the best years Connor McDavid's career. So, you know, Bruce, thanks. I think we can just thank Steve Simmons right now. He got Connor.
He got through to him, you think?
You know what? Stranger things have happened. There was other comments too, by other writers in other cities. But you know, everything Simmons said there was fair comment. And was
I don't disagree with any of that.
I didn't when he said that he was bang on. The fact of the matter is that for a number of reasons which we've already spelled out, him taking less money really could help the Oilers in the long term win more Stanley Cups. And you got to put some weight on that. Now, McDavid was already doing that, I was arguing then, by taking 13.25 if that figure was correct, and it sounds like it was. But now he's really significantly doing it I think this represents a major hometown discount, and I'm thrilled with it.
Well, by floating that figure around last week, they successfully established the bar at $13 million. You notice how Simmons sort of referred to that, coming in under that figure for the good of the team. So having the bar raised so high in the first place, I mean, I think it was a crafty negotiation, and probably on both sides of the fence.
All right, let's go to what the reaction is from some other observers and Oilers fans, Bruce, okay?
Sure.
All right. This is all on Twitter. Steve Schulte at FatLossFTW. 1 million in savings for one of the two best players on the planet for maximum term is a huge win. From RCN at AKA RCN. Could McDavid have played this any better? Number leaks. People accept it, but a tad surprised how high it is. Actual number is lower. Hashtag genius.
I've got one for you. This is Heather Margin, our friend at co-podcast with us one time. And she has said she's already listened to you on this podcast. She says, McDavid gave up $2.5 million per year. He could have asked for the max and got it. He took $20 million less than his market value.
I think I tweeted that as well. Okay. This from DC.
I think she probably independently arrived at that conclusion.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious, right? Okay, this from Keith at KM 1967. McDavid signs for $12.5 million a year. At least someone is making more than Omar Khadr.
Ouch.
We won't get into that, Bruce.
Yeah, no. All right. Let's just laugh at the joke and move on.
Yeah. Here's Cap Friendly at Cap Friendly. With a contract value of $100 million, McDavid is the fifth player to reach a nine-figure contract. Ovechkin, $124 million. Weber, $110 million. Crosby, $104 million. Kovalchuk, $100 million. Oh, who gave Kovalchuk $100 million? I guess the same people that traded for Taylor Hall.
Oh, jeez.
We won't get into that either, Bruce. Let's just move on from the joke. Cap Friendly continues. While McDavid's contract is 8 years in length, all of the other contracts with a value of $100 million or greater ranged in length from 12 to 15 years. Wow. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of those contracts were rigged, knowing that the player is unlikely to play the last few years of the deal, trying to lower the salary cap the average hit each year so they could sign other good players.
Yeah, so, and the 12 to 15 years, I mean, that got legislated out with the last CBA. So McDavid is the first in the new era. You know, I mean, obviously, if 8 years is your absolute maximum, then you're looking at a record cap hit to make it to $100 million, and he's the first, and he may be the first for quite a while to achieve that.
Here's one last interesting one. It's almost all positive, Bruce. By the way, not unexpected. This is from Jimmy Murphy, who's a Boston sports writer, sportscaster, and he tweets, Boston fans, media that bash Chiarelli are perfect examples of why sports world hates Boston. They've become spoiled brats and whiners. McDavid's contract value is market value. Chiarelli had to do this. Those bashing him now can talk to me when he wins more cups in Edmonton. So that's interesting. It sounds like he's hearing some people bashing Chiarelli for this big contract in Boston. They don't see this. And you could see how they would see this, because it is $2 million more than anyone else has ever signed for. They see this as the Oilers overpaying and Chiarelli throwing another big contract at someone like he's accused to of doing in Boston. But
yeah, well,
if you actually look close into it, that's a foolish kind of critique.
Bashing a former GM is a sport in fan circles, almost as big a sport as bashing the current GM in whatever city you happen to be in. I mean, Chiarelli, I had this debate with somebody the other night talking about Chiarelli's bad contracts when he was in Boston, and I mentioned that. Yeah, also the Chara and Bergeron and Thomas contracts. You know, I mean, some of these contracts did pay off, and they had a core team that was pretty good for a long time based on high but fair pay for their best players.
There's only one. You can count the number of GMs who don't get bashed, Bruce. On one finger.
One. There's Sam one Pollock. Of them. Yeah, well.
Even Glenn Sather gets bashed, right? Because he had the final 10 years weren't too illustrious in Edmonton. But Sam Pollock is the only GM, I think. Maybe mm-hmm. he gets bashed, though, because he picked Irving Grundman as his,
successor?
Successor. I was going to say predecessor. Mm-hmm. As his successor.
No, that so was even smart Sam by Pollock him. Gets... That made his career stand out all that much more. It was all about him. There's, Sam Paul. I'll bash Sam Pollock if no one else will. That's because I hated the Habs, and he always seemed to win the deals.
Here's our fan poll, Bruce. What does Connor McDavid's new contract mean for the Edmonton Oilers? 50% mean say it's a win for the Oilers.
That's good.
44% say it's a steal of a deal.
Okay, now we're talking.
3% say it's a major fail. We do have that percentage of Leaf and Flames fans. And 3% say it's a loss. So 6% are saying it's either a major fail or a loss. Now, I don't know of any real Oiler fan, Bruce, or anyone who follows the team who's nonpartisan who would say this is in any way a major fail or a loss. There's just no way to frame that. I don't, at this, you know, I don't buy it. I guess, what was McDavid supposed to do? Sign for significantly less than similar players had signed for in the past? So I have some average contract percentages, Bruce, of the cap. So McDavid's at 16.6%.
Of this year's cap, and who knows what it will be of next year's cap when the contract kicks in. Yes.
So these are all comparables to when the player signed the cap.
Oh, okay.
Cap friendly, good, okay? Fair. McDavid at 16.6. Olvi at 16.8 on his second deal. But again, that was this huge mega contract, right, where they, you know, with last year's that had lower, I think, at the lower cap hit. Crosby's first, or his second contract was at 17.3. And his second, which was, again, one of these mega contracts at 14.5. Malkin's second at 15.3, and his second deal at 14.7. Kane and Taves, 15.2, I think, and that was their third deal.
Right.
So, you know, Bruce, not bad. The Oilers are, McDavid's contract is within range of that, and you know, the thing, when you compare it to Crosby's second contract, his was for 5 years and McDavid's for 8.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's such a massive difference. Now, you could say, oh, well, the cap hit should be on McDavid's contract should be higher then because they're paying for UFA years. But I think there's actually this reverse thing that works on these really great superstar players and only with them, nobody else, in that the percentage of the cap that they take up decreases over time with the length of their deal because the cap rises.
Generally.
So the fact that McDavid signed for 8 years and Crosby only 5 represents a major win for the Oilers, not any kind of loss, because those final 3 years on the years of his contract, it's going to be, you know, maybe 13, 14, 15% of the cap. That'd be fantastic for the Oilers.
Yeah, it also has a real heavy bonus structure. 86 of the 100 million is apparently paid in bonuses, and that's the new way of the world. They call it a buyout proof
lockout
deal, but also lockout proof. I was just going to add that. Yeah, it's lockout proof, and I'm actually gaining taking heart from the fact that these are becoming more and more commonplace, because the more financially punitive it is on the Oilers or the owners to stop the league again next time, if they're going to still have to pay their players not to pay, they're going to be maybe a little bit quicker to resolve the issue since they're paying the dudes anyway. So
excellent,
I don't want
point.
Any more lockouts. I've had enough of that crap.
That is an excellent point, Bruce. That's the second best thing I've heard today.
Thank you.
That is.
I don't think I have to ask you what was the best.
That even might be the best thing that I've heard today. Really? Seriously? Because I am tired of lockouts. And I think another one, like, I know, like we always say this, it'll ruin hockey. But at some points, it does start to ruin hockey. It does turn away fans. And every time there's a certain percentage of people who are turned away from the game. And if they have to pay 60, 70, 80% of the salary from that year, they're not saving it. That's got to sting. So you got to love that. So keep doing that, players. Keep doing that, player agents. Keep that up.
Yeah, I mean, Carey Price, he signed, I think, 70 million of his 84 was in bonuses, and it's just becoming more and more. I mean, Lucic's contract is done that way, and it just seems to be, it's a sort of workaround of the restrictions of the current CBA, and they will always find a way to do. But at the same time, I think it's hard and fast that those guys get paid in 2020 or 2022 or whatever, whether there's games being played or not. So the guy's writing the checks, so probably want to see him playing games.
So what do you think Draisaitl signs for now, Bruce? What's your, do you think, I don't think, it's interesting. I think players have such varying mindsets that what McDavid did may or may not have an impact on Draisaitl. We just don't know.
Well, you said earlier that McDavid leaving the money on the table, if you accept that premise, sends a message for the other players, but maybe the message is, hey, he left more for me. And so they're all going to want a $2.5 million raise.
Some will see it that way. Some players may, but Chiarelli will make it clear to Draisaitl, or his agent at least, Liut. I mean, we don't even know how much the players hear. They might read now and then. So it's up to us to write it in our blogs, these things, like, dear Leon, please sign for $7 million a year kind of thing. But we don't know what the agent will tell the player, but Chiarelli is going to tell the agent, you know, if Draisaitl goes for the max here, it greatly impacts our ability to win the Stanley Cup, and it greatly impacts our ability to sign his apparent good friend Darnell Nurse. And those are the facts of the matter. Right. Could you please pass that on to Leon? And I'm hoping, and I have no, other than, you know, the rhetoric of this high ask from the Draisaitl camp, I have no reason to believe that Draisaitl won't be affected by those kinds of really sane arguments, and will come in at what is a reasonable value. And what I figure that is it's anywhere between 7 and 8 million, Bruce.
Okay.
And with 7 being a fair, completely fair contract, 7.5 being generous but not crazy generous, and anything above 8 million, you're getting to be, like, I think it's out of line with the comparable players for Draisaitl and a problem for the Oilers.
Well, the trouble with comparables, of course, is you're always looking at contracts signed in other years. With other cap hits, but also with other parameters, like what's pushing at the upper end of the market in those years. And boy, oh boy, from what I saw in free agent camp this year, and just some of the contracts that are being signed out there, that last year's $7 million is this year's $8 million. I mean, Mark Edward Vlasic, I love him as a player, but if you'd have told me he was going to sign for $56 million, I mean, whoa. The big long-term deals are going up. And to say you should sign a Tarasenko deal, well, Tarasenko signed that, 2 years ago? So I'm thinking
Tarasenko was 10.3 of the cap, Bruce. Mm-hmm. And so if Draisaitl signs for 10.5% of the cap right now, that'll be a cap hit of $7.8 million. So this is what I'm saying, Bruce. Right. Like, let's say, okay, we're going to give you more cap hit than Tarasenko got when he signed his deal. We think you're a better player, even though, you know, and it's actually going to be, Tarasenko signed for 4 RFA years, 4 UFA years. So it's the same thing with both those two players, it turns out, unless I have that wrong, but which is always a possibility.
Well, Draisaitl actually has 5 RFA years left because of that stunt they pulled when they sent him back to junior. So he burned up one of his UFA contract years, but the Oilers retained his rights for an extra year.
I was going off.
So he's got five years to run. Now, here's one option that I can imagine Chiarelli doing, and that is talking to the Draisaitl camp heavily about a bridge contract and saying, okay, well, if we can't agree on your 8-year worth, why don't we give you a nice contract for 1 year and we'll do this again next year? Or what say we do it for 2 years, we'll make it for a little bit more. Or even 3 years, we'll make it even a little bit more than that. So I'm saying, you know, 5.5, 6 million AAV for those 3 terms. Or we'll offer you 8 at 7.5. Now we've given you 4 offers, Leon. But 3 of them are bridge offers. But at least you're giving the guy something to chew on and think about.
Yeah, we've heard this idea of a bridge contract in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And Kucherov of Tampa Bay signed one. That's about
value contract.
So that's a possibility. I actually don't think that's what's going to happen, but it's certainly a possibility. John Shannon has mentioned that. So, yeah, there's all these different possibilities. I just think, I think it's going to take a while. We hear that Mike Liut is this cautious, slow moving, careful, calculating individual, which is fair enough. They want to see if they can get an offer sheet, which is also fair enough. So We'll see. I think it's going to take a while, but I
could have been a room with Peter Chiarelli, and there's going to be a lot of cold-blooded calculating going on. It's my take.
Two human calculators at work, Bruce. Eh? Just guys that are got alligator blood and calculators where brains should be, and we'll work it out. They'll grind it out. Anyway,
well,
more positive now than I was 3 hours ago. With McDavid's, I think McDavid's contract may well have an impact. Mm-hmm. And I'm more positive that Draisaitl's going to sign at a reasonable amount.
Let's get this done. Get Leon in at 7.5, and then you're looking at $20 million for your top two centers. And then you can budget around that for forever, basically. I mean, we're talking about long, long term then at a set price.
Yeah, so if they're both at if they get in and you know both these contracts 12.5 and if it's 20 million for the two of them, that's going to be a doable amount of the cap hit to build a Stanley Cup team, I think, and that's what I'm hoping for.
It hurts. I mean, with Kane and Taves, you've seen the same thing happen in Chicago, but also they were having to deal with a large number of proven vets with a winning history. It wasn't just those two guys. So they had, you know, that cost Chicago. If Edmonton has two guys making 20 or 21 million, well, the hope is that they're getting better and that the cap is getting larger so that their drain on the percentage of it, as you keep pointing out, would be less.
I just hope the Oilers actually are proactive with players like Nurse and Benning, Kajula, and sign them sooner than later. Because, Bruce, if this team wins the Stanley Cup next year and Nurse, Benning, and Kajula are key players in the playoffs, which they could easily be, their price shoots to the roof. Same with Maroon. I think the mistake they made with Draisaitl, for one reason or another, they didn't get him signed earlier. And I think they should try to avoid it with Benning, Nurse, Kajula, other young players like that. So we'll see if they do that. Doesn't seem to be Shirley's inclination to do that, though. He seems to be more...
Well, you got to pick your spot.
You can't, with Clef,
you can't give them all 8 year packs. You got to pick your three or four or five, whatever, core players and lock them up. And otherwise, 1 and 2 years, 3 years is the way to go. I mean, contracts like that Cassian contract, you don't need to pay long, long term to get a guy in your, you know, in your plans for the foreseeable future. And for the young guys, bridge deals after their ELC is up. I mean, that's the norm. And guys like McDavid and Draisaitl are the exception to that.
See, the thing is, Bruce, if Benning or Nurse play in the top four in the playoffs next year, and there's a good chance that's going to happen, one or the other, then you're looking at a Klefbom contract, right? If they
have. Sure.
So I just think do it quicker. And for shorter term, sign them up for three-year deals, you know, for between $2 and $3 million. That's what I want to see. That's what I'm hoping to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt we'll see that, of course. Maybe there's good reasons that I'm not thinking about for the approach that I'm suggesting. But so Bruce, the Oilers signed a bunch of no-name, nobody players. Well, not nobody, no-name players, unheralded players.
Who are those guys?
So it just really speaks, I think, to how crappy the Oilers have been in terms of their drafting and finding junior players. There's a whole bunch of players on that Bakersfield team last year on ELCs who just have never come close, even at that level, Bruce, to being good players. So like Braden Christopher, Kyle Platzer, Ben Boettger, Mitch Moraz, just endless signings that the Oilers have made. And maybe every team does this.
Yep.
You know, I don't study every team, but like I do the Oilers. Maybe every team has that, but it's a pretty disheartening thing to look at is how many of that group, Kelly Chase, just didn't even come
Greg
close.
Chase.
Is it Greg Chase? Oh, Kelly's his uncle. To come close to panning out. Not even at the AHL level, Bruce.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a few in every team. I mean, you sign 3-year entry-level contracts. 3 years is a long time. I mean, it's enough time for guys, hopefully, to improve and get up to the NHL level. And sometimes it takes them 4 or 5 or 6 years, like it did the last time at Pitlick or you know, some of these mid-round draft choices, or Anton Lander, that it took them 7 years before they found out that they didn't like what they have. And yet, if a guy doesn't click at the pro ranks, that 3 years can just go on and on forever. And that by the last year, you know, it's a waste of space. What I found interesting, though, more about the signing was, first of all, the void that was having to be filled. I did a list yesterday, actually three lists, showing the Oilers players under contract before and after July 1st. And the first two focused on the sort of the 23-man group that naturally settled out to be in the Oilers, and basically was the Oilers from last year's playoffs, with a couple of obvious moves, obviously Strome in for Eberle, Carr in for Pouliot or whoever in the depth chart. But all those guys were players on the Oilers last year. Of the next 14 guys, only one of them has ever played in the NHL at all. Dylan Simpson, 3 games. None of them has ever so much as signed a second contract with the Oilers yet. They've got 2 guys that are restricted free agents, and the other 12 still on their entry-level contracts. Not one of them had ever played a game for another organization. So there was a big gap there, because all these guys that sort of fit those criteria, Anton Lander, Jonas Gustafsson, Mark Fraser, Fontaine that they got from Minnesota, those guys were all sent on their various directions, and there's this big gaping hole in the minor league system for sort of veteran minor league pros, and eight fell swoops. Charlie went out and he filled that hole, because he signed 8 guys to contracts that were for $700,000 or less at the NHL level, but paid a pretty good coin in the AHL, like $200,000 and up for 6 of the 8, I think it was. And minor league veterans, sort of buffer players that can, A, be, you know, take some of the ice time, be mentors and experienced players on the minor league team, so they're not getting absolutely crushed. But also tweeners that you can call up entry-level players like Brad Malone or Ryan Stanton, and you can be fairly confident that they're not at least going to get completely overwhelmed like you might experience if you had to call up an ELC guy with 0 games played. So the group of signings collectively, I mean, none of the individual names particularly exciting. I think Ryan Stanton's an interesting player, and maybe one or two of the other guys, and obviously time will tell on all of them.
So, Bruce, one of the things about these, the Oilers just lost a ton of kind of minor league tweeners. Davidson, Reinhardt, Kyra, Pitlick, Anton Lander. So that's part of the reason they're filling in with so many players. I do like some of the signings. I think both Stanton and Simpson, from watching Simpson, I think he's quite a good player. He's not as good as Davidson, but I think he can play in a bottom pairing in the NHL, maybe hold his own this coming year. And the thing about it is, he'll be cheaper, and also Stanton will be cheaper for the Oilers than having Mark Fain on the roster. So if it comes down to who's going to sit in the press box, I think they're going to pick Stanton with his $700,000 cap hit. They can send Fain to the farm, and they'll have to pay $2.6 million of his cap, but they don't have to pay $1.025 million of his cap. So they'll save that $1.025 million. They'll have to pay the Stanton contract $700,000. I think I explained this correctly. And that's a savings of about more than $300,000 on your cap, which is significant when you're trying to pick up players at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And you need to get scraped for every single penny. You're up against the cap, and it could mean the difference between the Oilers pulling in a good player or not having the cap room to pull it in. So this is Mark Fain's up against it if he's not able to beat out Eric Greiba, I think, for actually a starting role this year.
Well, he also is more likely to clear waivers. I mean, not that anybody's necessarily going to go after Ryan Stanton, but Fain's contract is kind of bulletproof. And they send him down to the minors. That's been proven extensively already. And
yes, it has a couple times.
If the incremental savings, I mean, that business where you can sink the minimum salary plus $375,000 in the minors this year. So now it's up. It used to be $950,000. Now it's $1.025 million. Anybody down at the minimum, like, it's basically all the guys that Chiarelli just signed, And last year he signed Jordan Osterley at league minimum. The year before he signed Brandon Davidson, basically league minimum. And part of the selling job to the player is, if you take less, then that margin between you and that other veteran that you're trying to beat out becomes greater. It's to your competitive advantage that you might help you make the team, even though financially it's your disadvantage. Long term, you make the team, you're going to get paid for your career. So it's a career move.
Let's have another. Let's look at, do we know Kyler Yamamoto's bonuses this year, Bruce? Because that's another factor, because, you know, he's only a little bit younger than Puljujarvi. Puljujarvi's got, he's got huge bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see if we have that from Yamamoto.
I don't think he's signed yet, has he?
Oh, you're right. He hasn't even signed yet, so we can't look
at that. It'll be lower. Just those contracts are largely wrote by draft order.
Yeah.
The first draft guy gets the maximum. The second pick gets the maximum minus $100,000 in the bonuses or something. And by the time he gets outside of the top five, if you look at the difference between Draisaitl and Reinhardt's bonus versus Nurse's bonus, and Nurse was the seventh pick, they're substantial. By the time you get outside of the top 20, I mean, when Jordan Eberle got drafted 22nd overall, mind you, obviously a different cap regime, but his salary was only 1.1 with the bonuses. Like, his bonuses were relatively quite small. So hopefully with Yamamoto, he'll have some bonuses, but they won't be massive. He's not a Puljujärvi class bonus baby where he gets a big ticket.
Maybe he'll go for that big signing bonus on July 1st, though, to lock out his contract. Now, this just makes me think, Bruce, that Bettman's probably thinking, yeah, I'll just lock them out on June 29th. If he did that, would he have to pay the? Would the NHL have to pay those?
Oh, for Christ's sake. I don't know.
Bettman's thinking, yeah, you guys think you got me. You don't got me. You got nothing on the Bettman. I got this figured out.
I can never. I always think of that scene from Bond Cop Bad Cop, where the commissioner at the end of the movie, it's all about hockey in Canada, and Commissioner Harry Buttman literally stands on his soapbox and says, I know hockey is important to you people.
I wonder when the CBA does end. Does it end on, is it July 1st? Is that the date for the CBA too? Because he, in theory, if maybe he could just lock them out the day before and not have, and the NHL teams wouldn't have to pay those bonuses. But
I think it's September 15th. I think it's the same as getting a training camp.
Yeah, okay, that's good. They're going to be stuck.
Oh, four, they played a World Cup, and the last game of the World Cup was September 14th, and then they locked out the players on 2015. On September 15th, the very next day, the lockout started.
So I don't think we're going to see, until the Draisaitl contract is done, Bruce, that any more signings, although we'd all like to see, you know, some old future Hall of Famer sign with the team. Jaromir Jagr excites the imaginations of some fans, Bruce, I understand.
Well, it'd be fun, sure. I mean, I'd love to, personally, as a fan, watch old man Jagr play for a year. I think it'd be great. Can you imagine a power play Oilers could put up?
I don't know if he'd be on the top power play, would he?
Jaromir Jagr? I'm thinking probably, yeah.
Does he shoot right or left?
He shoots left.
I don't think he'd be on the top power play.
Okay.
You know, you got McDavid and Draisaitl there. He'd be on he'd be on
the side. Exactly my point. Fill that. Anyway,
I'd be okay with Jagr. I like the idea of a Ginla, because mainly because when I just remember from the end of the year, small sample size, but he looked great for LA when they were playing the Oilers. He looked like one guy who really, really, really wanted to win and played well. So I think as a third line or fourth line guy, Ginla can make a lot of sense. Plus he shoots right. So
well, there's that.
There's that too. So, but his scoring has dropped off considerably.
Well, Shirelli did state that his options were, that his priorities were sign McDavid first, then sign Draisaitl and see what was left for everybody else. Well, of course he deviated from that order. He signed Chris Russell first, because I mean, clearly that was the number one priority. Then he got around to signing McDavid. Well, now we'll see if there's anything left for Draisaitl.
Now we
now I'm we, trolling. I'm trolling.
You totally are, but who can blame him, man?
There was a deadline.
Did you know that he is from, Chris Russell's from Carolina and he is a Cowboy? So
I did
who
I did
can blame
that,
Peter Chiarelli. That is an irresistible combination. He didn't play for the Oil Kings, but he did play in the Western Hockey League as well. So
the timing was such that if you wanted to lock up your own defenseman, and we saw many other teams do the same thing with players, you had until June 30th, and he literally couldn't sign with Dave until after July 1st. So his, for all that those were his priorities, he couldn't quite follow that timeline. And I guess if you hate the Chris Russell contract, then you can hate the timeline, but otherwise, for getting those players done, it pretty much...
Chris, when I see Mark Edward Vlasic at 8 years for $7 million, mm-hmm. I suddenly don't. Yeah. I'm suddenly a lot cooler with the Chris Russell. Like, Vlasic's obviously a better player, a much better player than Chris Russell. Yeah. But, you know, how much better? And over 8 years? And when you see Carl Alsner and. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
5 years, 23 million.
Kulikov and
Dmitry
Winnipeg.
Kulikov, 3 years, 13 million. That one really played me. And I don't know if that's a $4.3 million defenseman. He's better than Klefbom, Larson, and Russell, I guess.
Isn't he? That's kind of, I don't really know, but like he's, I just think of an erratic Nikitin kind of player. probably completely unfair comment. But, I think the Russell. You know what I'm not hearing so much anymore? I'm actually still seeing bitter comments about the Russell contract. I am no longer seeing bitter comments about the Eberle trade. And I think it really has... The whole thing with McDavid and Draisaitl, how much money they're going to get, I think is fundamentally sunk in with Oilers fans. And suddenly the whole thing with Eberle, it's like, okay, we get it. Mm-hmm. Weighing the fact that he had two down years and definitely a down playoff... Plus, with that huge contract for 2 years, I just think people think, all right, okay. And I'm not hearing anyone complain about that anymore, which is a relief. That's a relief. I've probably spoken too soon, though.
Well, I mean, when you consider that, let's guess that McDavid stays healthy and achieves all of his bonuses this year and gets paid $3.775 million. He's basically getting a, $9 million raise on that. As I've got it here, 231% raise, and we're happy. I mean, how good is he at outperforming his one remaining ELC year if he's really a 12.5 or 15 or who knows, $20 million player? So this would be a good year to make hay, that's for sure.
I have the Oilers right now, according to my calculations, Bruce, and they're probably, I'm not a capologist, so... It looks like they're about 70. Let me just go back to the other chart. The cap's at $75 million, and the Edmonton Oilers are at, right now, as we speak, Bruce, factoring in the Pouliot buyout and everything else.
Cap friendly has them 28th out of 31.
Yeah, they're not factoring in the Draisaitl signing. So I'm estimating Draisaitl at 7.5. Okay. If Draisaitl gets 7.5, 71.3 million. Mm-hmm. And that includes a carryover of $800,000, Korpikoski, Pouliot buyouts. And the only estimate in there is the Draisaitl deal. So now that's not including the Sekera. They'll get some money back from Sekera being out. Right. So 71.3 and the cap is at 75, and that's including 6.7 million in ELC bonuses for all their players. So, which I don't, maybe the cap friendly number is not including that. So they're going to have, looks like they're going to have a couple million dollars, Bruce, to either spend now, $3 or $4 million now or later. It's kind of exciting.
Well, if you wait till later, in a sense, you can spend more and that you can pay a higher salaried player from the trade deadline to the end of the season than you could for the entire season.
And that will now cue us all to go look at next year's UFAs, right? That's what we're going to do next, as soon as we get off the computer. All right, Bruce, I think we've probably chattered on long enough, I'm guessing. It was good to talk to you, and it's a great, nine more. It's just when it sinks in.
2026.
Great time to be an Oilers fan. Great time to be an Oilers fan, Bruce. Fantastic.
a good day for all of us.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for everyone for listening. Thanks, Bruce, for being here. And in the meantime and in between time, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.